Damn these Biloxi blues, it happens every night.
Every night.
And I ain't never met a riverboat dealer that could ever be a friend of mine.
I have not.
Summer heat never treats me kind, it leaves trouble on my mind. So I'm bidding farewell, putting in my notice, and I'll see you at another time. This highway does not know my name, and I don't care, no, I don't care. Heading my way for another place, and I got three good tires and a spare. Just a white line gypsy getting out of Mississippi with just enough gas to get there.
Low budget live, not so live, from the Low Budget Live Bar and Grill in beautiful southern Middle Tennessee. Hope you're all doing well out there, you bunch of low lifers. And this is the podcast for Monday, May the 6th. We halfway through the month of May, man. The month of May has been interesting, to say the least, around these parts. And I appreciate so many of you lowlifers reaching out. Y'all have seen the social media post of all the life milestones that are going on around here. And I've talked about it some on the show, but this past Friday night, my man Charles Chuck Hugh Lorenzo, as we call him around here. Charlie, my oldest stepson, graduated high school, and he is currently at the beach for senior trip. We're not okay with it. It's a weird one, man. You do your best to raise them, and then they hit 18 years old, and then they graduate high school, and they automatically, around here anyways, they just want to run. They want to run down to the Gulf Coast and act like they're adults. And it's tricky. It's like a rite of passage. You know, you get in the car, you go down I-65 from here, and you load up with your buddies, and you don't know crap about crap, and you go live on your own for a week, doing Lord knows what. And I did it, and I know a lot of y'all listening went on your senior trips, and it's interesting. Actually, I will say my senior trip was a little different. I went bass fishing. I went, me and two really good friends of mine, Colt Littrell, Matt Taylor. We spent a week at Joe Wheeler State Park. We actually did not go to the beach with all of our friends, and it was a dang good time. Some of my favorite memories from that week. But he's down there. He does have parental supervision, adult supervision. Anyways, good friend of ours. They all rented a big house, so not as many worries as we probably would have if he had just gone down there like Harper did on her senior trip, where there were a bunch of them staying in different condos, and it was exactly the nightmare you would expect. So had that going on, and it's been a crazy year, man. But this month, the last 2 weeks, you know, Harper graduating college, Charlie graduating. So many of y'all, I know some of y'all reached out to me. I know you're going through this right now, and it's crazy. You know, triple threat. Marissa, she was very upset on Friday, and still is today, a little upset over everything. And I am too, just because, man, you look back at pictures, and when you're making, you know, we've been making posts, and you doing congratulatory things, and you're writing notes, and thinking about everything, and man, you look at pictures that just seem like, it seems like they were 20 years ago and they were 5 years ago, and you look at how much has changed. It's crazy to think about how fast things actually do move, and everybody tells you that when you're growing up. It's a very cliche thing, but time does move fast. And if you're listening and you've just got like a newborn, or you got a kid that's under 2 years old, man, I just tell you, because I spent a lot of time just running around crazy, playing music and enjoying life, busy with work and things, and I consider myself a good dad. I've tried to be as involved in my kids' lives, but man, you know there are things you just missed. And as they get older, I think that would be my advice to a new dad, and mom especially, just, man, every single thing, the stuff that you think, like, oh, my God, I'm staying up all night with this kid. He's crying. The little things that they're just little for just a little bit of time, man. So it's cool. But you, as Marissa and I have been upset, my overwhelming theme to her is, like, and for me that I keep telling myself is you just have to be proud. You just have to be proud that they are who they are, and you've done what you can do to get them here. And Charlie's certainly one of those kids, man, that he's a joy to be around, and super smart kid, quirky, funny, super clever, and so just a joy to be around. He's you know, been in my life for 9 years, and it's been amazing. So congrats to Charles on graduating, man. Crazy to even think about. Another milestone that's very special to me that happened this weekend that I got to brag on, those Duncan boys. Hudson and Ryder fished their first tournament together. I've talked about these tournaments. It's a little lake bass club deal that they have here. It's actually the last one they're ever going to have. I've talked about it on here. It's great. Like, you catch a couple fish, you make the top 20, you get paid up, and it's very cool. But this time you can be a boat captain for juniors, and there's mostly adults fishing. There are some kids fishing with their folks and things. And, but I took out the Express and I captained the boys, and, just sat there for the first time. A lot of you high school captains out there, parents, my hat's off to you. And I'm going to get into that, you know, as the years go on. Hudson starts high school next year, and he's asking about the high school tournament thing. And so hopefully we're going to be able to compete in some of those. But just sit there all day drove me crazy. But I was so proud. They ran the trolling motor. Both of them shared responsibility on it. Hudson ran it for the most part. Ryder's very good at running the trolling motor too. But Hudson fished hard all day, man. And this lake's crazy because it's an island-only lake and you don't get to run around. So you fish the whole day. I've talked about it on here. And it's exhausting, really, man, because you just make so many casts. And you get a lot of bites from a lot of little fish. And 12-inch keepers are very hard to come by. They call them two keepers, and they got paid. So the Duncan boys got their first payday fishing as a Duncan team, and it was a very cool day for me. I filmed it. I'm going to post it on YouTube, but it was very, very, very neat day watching him cast, watching Ryder cast, watching them pick apart how they would approach things, you know. It was cool. And I tried to just lean back. I didn't suggest a lot of things. I'm just like, you just kind of do what you want to do. And it was very, very proud dad moment, to say the least. So thanks to Jeff Truelove, as a man that's put these tournaments on for the last couple of years out there at this lake. There are some people that don't want these tournaments to be at this lake anymore, from what I'm hearing. So not going to get to do that. And it's been a very special thing for Hudson and I. Ryder's got to fish a couple, and we have some dear friends that fish out there. And it's just been like a real cool bass club feel, but won't be having those anymore. The last one was yesterday. So went out with a bang with Hudson and Ryder fishing it by themselves. Very, very cool deal. All right, want to say a quick thanks to the sponsors that make all this possible. StarTron, kicking ethanol in the teeth, in your chainsaw, in your weed eater, in your lawnmower, but most importantly, in your outboard engine. Ethanol will gum up the works. There's more ethanol out there than ever before. It's like that monster hides under your bed. It's like that uncle you don't want to talk to at the cookout. Y'all know who it is. Uncle Lawrence is over there in the corner. You don't want to talk to him. Nobody wants to talk to him. He's just hanging around. He's hanging around waiting to corner you and be like, got a girlfriend? That's what ethanol does. That's what ethanol does to your motor. So little dab will do you. You don't have to shake it, but I like to. 256 gallons is what this bottle will treat right here. This is I think this is the 16-ounce. Yeah, 16-ounce in this 16-ounce bottle, 256 gallons. You can get it everywhere. Tractor Supply, Wally World, the Bass Pro Shops, Auto Parts Stores, O'Reilly, StarTron, kicking ethanol in the teeth. I'm bringing you Low Budget Live. All right, Pro Guide Batteries, lithiums. Let's talk about lithium batteries. Super, super light. They recharge very fast. And so far, I haven't been able to kill them. I've tried to kill them. You can't kill them. ProGuide Batteries. You can use code LBL10 to get you 10% off there at ProGuide Batteries. I'm running a 31 AGM series for my cranking battery and the lithiums for my trolling batteries. LBL10 at ProGuideBatteries.com. Go tell them you a lowlifer and get you some new juice. Baitworks.com, new to the show this year, but near and dear to my heart. I love those folks. Put up a new video. Tried to do the series of Baitworks Bait of the Week type thing, Spro Prop and Frog video this past week. Crazy blowups. Go check it out because it's a lot of fun. I'm putting those together with the folks from Baitworks, but they just got a big shipment in on those Prop and Frogs, and it is time. It is time. The boys actually caught a couple on a Prop and Frog yesterday, but I love that frog. It's a great one. You can use code Duncan-10 at baitworks.com. I see so many of y'all using that code, but be sure to use the code. Be sure to use it. Let them know you're a lowlifer. Get you a little bit of a break there, and we've got something very special in the works with Baitworks for, let's say, starting in like July. Okay. So just stay tuned on that. It's going to be something for low lifers that I'm very excited about. I'll just leave it at that. And we will make an official announcement probably, maybe even by the next show, waiting on some confirmation on that. But baitworks.com, if they don't have it, they got it on the way. Trust me, it's an impressive operation. I've seen it firsthand. All right. We thank the folks from Baitworks. And last but not least, hang the banner. Express Boats, Hot Springs, Arkansas, the official boat of Low Budget Live and the Traveling Circus, the X21 Pro, is for sale. It's for sale. Actually going to Express with that bad boy this week to get some little TLC, a couple of TLC things done to it, and then it will be available, I'm going to say, around June. But the X21 Pro with the C-Deck, power poles, 250 Yamaha show that pushes that bad boy, 96-inch beam. Could not be more impressed with the boat. I say this all the time. It's my favorite bass boat I've ever owned. I unpacked it yesterday, and I was like, weirdly, it's been an emotional time around here, guys. But every boat I've ever sold, it's like, damn. You start thinking back on the memories, and there's just been so many in that thing. And I've been everywhere from the Gulf of Mexico to freaking Upper Michigan on the Great Lakes and the thing, and everywhere in between. I've fished tournaments. I've had heartbreak in it, you know. I've had some success in it, and amazing great days on the water with family and friends. And so it's always crazy to think, man, I unpacked it really for the last time, and I should be picking up the 2023 Express very soon, and it's going to be a little different. So you want to stay tuned for the details on that. A new model coming out, 21 footer, that's it's got some cool new features, so we're going to get into that very soon. But Express Boats, building excitement since 1966. Okay, changing gears. And we've got, today's show is, it's bittersweet for a lot of reasons, but it's also one that I am very much looking forward to. I want to say my condolences go out to the family of Ray Scott, 88 years old. We lost Ray, the bass boss, the father of bass fishing, this week. He passed away at his house there in Alabama. And I made a post on Instagram this week. I had a personal tie to Ray for several years of my life, and a lot of people don't know that. And I shared that story this week. And it's brought back a lot of memories and things, and I wanted to share some things with you folks, and I want to share some thoughts just on Ray Scott. And we've got a great guest today that's gonna share with us as well, and who's also a hero of mine and someone I'm lucky to call a friend. And Ray Scott, you know, a lot of people just the MC, he was just the MC. He was the guy in the cowboy hat and the vest and the tassels, man, and he had him up there, and it was like he was just larger than life. And I think and this is no shade at anyone, certainly, but I think any MC since then in the sport of bass fishing has fell a little short. There are great ones that do a great job. But I think that, like, he was just the epitome of, like, all those early classics. And for me, right? And I think the new generation, and so many of y'all listen and understand what I'm saying, I think the new generation of bass fishermen, they never experienced those TNN Saturday mornings, man, where he was the host of the television show and he was on stage in those weigh-ins and he was on stage at the Classic and he was just larger than life. He was larger than life and he was very much that way in person. In the time that I got to know him and the times I got to spend with Mr. Scott, he was that. He was just incredible. And I've got a picture of my brother and I with him at an early Bassmaster Classic in the 90s. I believe it might have been New Orleans. It might have been the one Davey Height won. Met him at the expo and got a picture. And I'm a brace-faced little punk meeting with Mr. Scott with my Bassmaster hat on. Very cool. But it just got me thinking, you know, and I've seen so many people make the post this week, and it's made me happy, no matter what organization they're a part of, no matter what they do in the sport of bass fishing, whether you're a regular Joe that just likes to tournament fish a Tuesday evening jackpot, or you're a seasoned pro, or you're a dumb podcast host like myself, none of it would be possible without Ray Scott. None of this would have ever existed if it wasn't for an insurance salesman from Montgomery, Alabama, Pentlala, Alabama, to be specific. He just dreamed it all up, man, in 1967 in a hotel room in Jackson, Mississippi. Dreamed the whole damn thing up. The whole thing. We bicker and complain about all the things in the sport at times. You're with MLF, you're with Bass, they're doing this, they're doing that. This guy, MPFL's over here doing their thing, the Toyota Series, blah, 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 Alabama Bass Trail. All of this, one cowboy hat wearing redneck, fast talking redneck from Alabama. All of it, man. Let that sink in. And I know that goes without saying, but we owe him and owed him so much. So much. And I've just been thinking a lot about Mr. Scott this week. And he was a hero of mine. He's a hero of so many. And none of it's possible without him, man. None of it's possible. So, rest easy, Mr. Scott. And I wanted to share a quick story that makes me smile. And it makes me think about different, you know, earlier times in life. And I wanted to share something with you that I've never really shared. And I might have told this story on one other podcast before, not my own. I actually think I might have told it on Like Live. But in 2001, right after September 11th, I was a freshman in college, University of North Alabama. And actually, I want to pause. I want to back up real quick and say, so I met Ray Scott. Because this is the funny part of the story. So I want to start with this. So I'd met Ray Scott in probably the summer of, I'll say like 99. I'd met him at the Classic, but met him personally at not a fanfare event in like the summer of 98, 99, around there, probably 99. At Charlie Brewer Slider Company, soft plastics manufacturer, fantastic. Charlie Brewer invented finesse fishing, was one of the pioneers of slider fishing, but I was fortunate enough to work there almost every year of high school, sophomore to senior year anyways, till I graduated and went to college. But their folks were like family to me. Papa Charlie was like a grandfather to me. His son, Chuck, his daughter-in-law, Linda, they're great people to me growing up, and I got to work in the fishing business as a child. I went and knocked on the door and asked them if I could have a job sweeping the floors, doing anything. So, and I got to spend my afternoons, my mom waiting in the parking lot while I just picked Charlie Brewer's brain about everything bass fishing. I got to do that. And I got to hear stories about him and Bill Dance and him and Ray Scott and him and Jimmy Houston and him and so many people, so many people. And Charlie was a hero of mine. And one day in the summer, I pulled up. I worked like 3 days a week during the summer. And I pulled up and there was a Jaguar. Not a lot of Jaguars in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. There's a Jaguar in the parking lot with Alabama plates. I had no clue. It was early, like 7:45 in the morning, 7:30, and we opened at 8. And I got there, and I walked in, and sitting at the damn table, at this table where we packed worms, no cowboy hat, no vest, no tassels, no hat at all, Ray Scott, down at the damn table, and Bob Cobb. And dude, I'm like 16, and it just, what? And Miss Linda Brewer was there, and she says, "Luke, do you know Mr. Ray?" And I'm, of course I do. And I got to spend about a half a day with Ray Scott just sitting there at the table while we did our job. And he was, you know, giving us a hard time and cutting up with all of us that worked there. And there were only about five of us in there. And so I met him. I met him that summer, and I got to talk to Bob Cobb and just, you know, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to be doing this for a living one day. I'm going to be... You're going to see me up there. You're going to see me in the Bassmaster magazine. And I told him this, man. I was very, you know, I've never been bashful. And I told him that. And so, anyways, fast forward 2001, I'm in college. And I go fishing on October 26th in a little small Triton aluminum boat. And the weather was horrible. My dad tried to talk me out of going. And I'll give you the short version of this. But I saved a man's life that day. I was the only one on the water, and saved a man named Robert Justice. Was able to, my boat almost sank, my bilge pump busted, and I got there. Mr. Justice's best friend had passed away. He had drowned, and I was able to save Mr. Justice, and I got him in and got him back safe. And it's a lot longer story than that, and maybe one of these days I'll tell the whole thing on here, do a video on it or something. It's been 20 years now, over 20 years, 21 this year. And it's, you know, it was a crazy day. It changed my life forever. And a lot of things happened. I got a lot of awards. I got a silver life-saving medal from the United States Coast Guard. They did a ceremony at the University of North Alabama for me. I got, you name it, police departments and the city of Lawrenceburg, here where I live, certificate of valor, just things that, you know. But for me, now, you don't save people. Like, it's just in the moment, you just do it, right? But for me, about a month after that, I was in the bed in my apartment in Florence, Alabama, and a phone rang, house phone. And I answered it. And a man says, "This is Ray Scott and Bob Cobb." It's Luke Duncan there. And I said, "Yeah, right." Click, hung up. I swear. Immediately, phone rings again. "Luke, this is Ray Scott and Bob Cobb." They had called my mother, got my phone number, and he had read that I saved a guy and saved Mr. Justice's life, and he wanted to meet me. Ray Scott wanted to meet me. He called me a hero on the phone. He wanted to meet me. And he drove up there that day, and he wanted to go out on the water and see the scene of the crime where everything had happened. And I took him out, my Triton aluminum boat. I had Ray Scott in my bass boat at 19 years old. He had a photographer, and there's an article online, you can find it. "Unlikely Bass Fishing Hero" is what he wrote, Mr. Scott. He had a photographer with him on the dock taking pictures, he and I. He was associated with Triton boats, but he had the cowboy hat and the tassels, the whole nine. And I'm skipping a jig up by his photographer, and I got a bite, and I missed it. And he said, "No way." He said, "Young man, if you catch a bass, I'm going to hand you a $100 bill. He said, "If you catch one under his feet," and it's not a crowded boat ramp, "I'll skip back up there and I catch about a 2-pounder. He whips out $100, hands it to me, and he says, "Son, you're going to go a long ways in this deal." And it was amazing. Amazing moment I'll never forget. And several things happened after that, but every time I would see Mr. Scott for years and 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 years, he would say, "There goes my hero." He'd be signing a line of autographs mile long with Bassmaster Classic. And he goes, "My hero, ladies and gentlemen, it's my hero, Luke Duncan." He introduced me to so many people from Bassmaster. They did articles. Tim Tucker wrote an article about me in Bassmaster Magazine, Bass Times. And really, with that, I started fishing the Bassmaster Opens the next year. I was actually 18 when this happened, by the way. 18, not 19. I was 19 the next year fishing the Opens. But they got me a spot in the Opens. I was in the Triton Boats catalog. Lots of things happened to me. And that moment in my life, I would not be sitting here today in front of you. I would not be at TH Marine. I would not have fished CFLW Tour. I would not be the Luke Duncan I am had I not met Ray Scott. So, amazing. Amazing. And I made a post about that this week, but I wanted to tell that because a lot of people don't know a lot about my story. But Ray Scott, there's a chunk of my life that he was very involved in. And he was an inspiration to me, and he was very motivational to me. And I would not have been really the person I am had I not met Ray Scott. And it's crazy. I think about the success I've been able to have. I think about my family. I think where I'm at in life. And I don't think about it enough. I think all of us take for granted things like this, and it takes someone passing, or, you know, we do it with musicians even, right? Like, oh, you're so-and-so, your favorite musician, and you go back to that song. You're like, oh, my God, that song, I didn't listen to that song enough. You know what I mean? So whether it's someone in your life that you love that passes away, but Ray Scott was my hero. And he called me his hero. It's amazing, man. It's amazing. But I want to share one more quick thing before we get to our guest today. So this letter, November 13th, 2001, it's postmarked right there. You can't see it on the camera, I'm sure, that well. But showed up at my house, at my folks' house. And in the return, right here, it just says George Bush. George Bush. And inside of this, I keep this on my desk daily. Never made a post about this. I've never shared it. It says, George Bush, November 12th, 2001. Dear Luke, my friend Ray Scott shared with me the story of your heroic rescue of a fellow fisherman from the Tennessee River, and I wanted to add my personal congratulations and a hearty well done. Your display of character is a prime example of the neighbor helping neighbor spirit for which Americans are known and admired. Your selfless deed saved a life, and Barbara and I salute you for caring and your courage. God bless you. Sincerely, and hand-signed, George H. Bush. I'm a dumb redneck from Tennessee. I'm lucky to have met a lot of the people that I've met in this whole world, and Ray Scott told a former president about me. God bless you, Mr. Scott. And now we are going to get to talk to another hero about Ray Scott, about life, about a lot of things. This man has been in the sport of bass fishing for 57 years as a professional. He is someone that I admire, I look up to. I read his books as a child. Growing up, my parents would give them to me as gifts. I watched his television show like so many of you. But I got to know him very well when I was on the FLW tour, and he is someone I'm proud to call a buddy. He's an amazing human being. He's one of the hardest working people. He's an example of work ethic, and that if you dream big and you chase it, you can do it. He is my friend, and we're going to get him on the phone right now. It's later in the day and the sun's getting low. I caught me a big one, and I got to let him go. Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Houston. See if we can get him. He stays busy. Told him I was.
Hello.
Jimmy Houston, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Luke. I'm doing good. I had to get off the phone there. I was talking to a guy who told me he used to be president of the United States, the same as Donald Trump. I met him up there one time.
Hang on a second. Time out. Wait. Okay, so real quick story. I was telling my Ray Scott stories. Ray, I got to know Ray over some things that happened in life. I saved a man's life on the Tennessee River back in the early 2000s, and I got to know Ray through that. And I had just, right before I called you, I read a letter from George H. Bush that got written to me as a 19-year-old man, that in the letter he says, my dear friend Ray Scott told me about your heroic act. And so I got a letter from a president, but you're going to tell me that one of my heroes that I'm glad to call my buddy, Jimmy Houston, just hung up on Donald Trump to do Low Budget Live?
Hey, man, your buddy, you know, friends come first. Yeah.
What just happened?
Hey, he probably just wants a little donation anyway, you know, calls every now and then. He's just running a little short on cash.
You think Trump was needing a little help? He's probably trying to get in that lake of yours out there.
Well, he might be trying to do that, but I'm telling you, that might take some pretty heavy credentials.
You think so? You would need Secret Service to keep him from sneaking back in.
And that's the truth.
Well, how, the truth. How the heck are you, buddy, besides just talking to presidents and then talking to me? You've had a lot of experience.
I've been doing good. I haven't been able to get to fish too awful much. I did fish Thursday this past week. We went and fished a couple different lakes, caught a bunch of crappie in one of them and a bunch of bass in the other one. Small bass, I might add. But I might have had one that hit 3 pounds. I'm not real sure.
But you don't discriminate, though. You genuinely love catching fish no matter what size and what's going on, though.
I don't even care what kind they are. You know,
that's
like
right.
I like them all, yeah. It's kind of like looking at a pretty girl. If she's short or tall, it don't make any difference.
I love
Except
it.
Except in those bass, we have a tendency to like those big, fat ones. Luke? Can you tell me?
I don't know, buddy. And you like to kiss them. You like to kiss the big, fat ones.
I do.
For sure.
I do. You know, I tell you what, I stuck a picture up on our Jimmy Houston Outdoors Facebook yesterday, the darndest kiss I've ever seen. You need to look at that. I mean, it's a big old bass, about 10 pounds, and he's almost, the guy was trying to kiss him, and the bass grabbed a hold of his face.
Come on, I missed that. I got to go back and look.
It's the darndest picture I've ever seen, and I like to never got that bass unstuck from that guy.
Seriously?
And the guy said he's going to quit fishing.
He said, this is dangerous.
Crazy. Yeah, well, you see the picture. It's out of sight.
Okay, I got to look at it. I thought I missed that one somehow. I follow you on there for sure.
I just stuck it up there yesterday. Okay. It's a pretty cool picture.
Okay, that's amazing. Well, I got to that story is incredible. I got to ask you about another quick story. So my parents, when I was growing up, and I got to thinking about this with Mr. Scott. I read his book when I was in school, and I got to meet him and so many of my bass fishing heroes. And I got a picture of me and you when I was probably 14 or 15 down at Pickwick Lake.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I got that. But my parents, my son, one of my kids just graduated high school this weekend, and I always give them books and write notes in them for their life, you know, life moments and things. Yeah. But my parents would do the same, and two of the books I got or Jimmy Houston books when I was a kid.
Well, I'll be. That's pretty cool, Luke. I appreciate that.
Very cool.
Your parents were smart.
They were, and they contributed to your amazing lake, I'm sure, with your book sales, like so many people did. But there was a story in one of these books, and I forget which of the two books that I read had this story, but this story, I swear, Jimmy, I never go fishing a day, honestly, that I don't think about this story. And it was the turtle story. Do you remember that? The turtle story.
What story was it?
So it was a turtle. You had, and I forget who you had in the boat, but it was like a celebrity pro-am tournament. And whoever it was, you guys were throwing spooks. And you thought a turtle had swirled. And whoever it was, it might have been like Barry Switzer or something at the time. And he said, Jimmy, there was a big bass. And you said, oh, it was a turtle. And he threw
the turtle's head right there in that spot.
Yes, and he throws in there and catches like an 8-pounder, and I never see a turtle that I don't think about that story. Because I thought,
you know, that actually happened in a BASS tournament, and it's pretty amazing. And you know, and I didn't know at that time, but it was one of the tips that I put in that particular book, and was that. You know, turtles, wherever you see them, they're always around some underwater structure of some sort.
Okay.
Because they live a lot of their lives underwater. Yeah. And there was obviously that turtle was under some structure that I could not see. And we didn't have locators in those days that we could look down under the water and see brush. And he threw at what he thought was a swirl of a bass, which is actually a swirl of that turtle. And caught that big fish. So, you know, I tell you, I throw it everywhere I see a turtle. I definitely throw around them nowadays. Of course, now we can swing our scope over there and take a look at what's
there. I was going to say, you're shining around now.
It's kind of a crazy, painful way to learn. But, you know, you talk about George H. Bush and Ray Scott and going back to some of the early days of fishing. We learned mostly by just being on the water. And that's the kind of lessons that we learn that you never forget, those type lessons.
That's right. Well, I reached out to you this week. I've been wanting to have you on for a long time, but I was reading a story, and I kind of pick guests for the show like that. They just pop up and different things, whatever's going on. And Mr. Scott passed. I was reading an article, and it had some quotes from you in it about those early days. And I was like, man, I got to reach out to Jimmy, talk about YouTube, talk about everything he's got going on. But I want to hear you. But in this article, you said your dad, Mr. Scott, came to visit your dad.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first members of BASS?
Well, I don't know exactly. We didn't ever know what number he might have been. But, you know, Ray Scott and Don Butler, who was a good friend of mine from Tulsa, that owned Okiebug. And Don brought Ray Scott down to my dad's resort on Lake Tenkiller.
Mm-hmm.
My dad bought that resort when I was a senior in high school. And, of course, we moved from Oklahoma City to the lake. And that obviously changed my life, without a doubt, by moving down and living on a lake. But we met Ray Scott, and I was just a kid at that time. And it was in before the 1967 tournament, the first tournament they had at Beaver Lake. And I don't know if it was the year before that. And I graduated from college in 1966, so I would have been 22 years old or so when he was there. And I don't know if it was 65, 66, but Don Butler brought Ray down there, and he was telling my dad about this great new organization he was going to start. Bass fishing organization. He's going to have a magazine. He's going to put on bass fishing tournaments. And of course, there were already fishing tournaments at that time, the World Series of Sports Fishing, which I actually fished that year.
Okay.
In fact, in 1966, I qualified by winning the Oklahoma State Championship. So, and we'd been fishing Project Sports tournaments for 3 or 4 years. And so there were other tournament organizations, but Ray was going to start this great tournament organization, and he was going to sell memberships in bass. And I don't know that he even called it bass at that time. I guess maybe he did. But anyway, my dad said, "How much are those memberships?" And he said, "They're $10 a year." And I don't know if he even had a rate set. But if you do Ray very well, and I know you did, he was not going to pass up a $10 bill.
No.
And my dad said, "Well, I'll just join that organization." And I remember he hit a button on the cash register. And those cash registers, those days, you had to pull a crank down. The bells went off and a drawer flew open. He reached in there and got a $10 bill out of that cash register and gave it to Ray Scott. And he said, "You sign me up for that bass organization." And and they tried to get me to fish that tournament because I was fishing tournaments. I was a current Oklahoma State champion at that time. But I didn't have the $125 entry fee. And so I did not get to fish Beaver. It's something I've regretted all of my fishing career, that I did not get to fish that first tournament. I would have liked to have been among that crowd. I knew a lot of the guys that did fish it. But I did get to fish the next tournament, either the second or third tournament. They had one on Smith Lake, Alabama, and one at Eufaula Lake, Alabama. And I don't know which was second and which was third, but I fished the Eufaula, Alabama tournament. So I did get to fish. That was 68.
And you caught him in that one, too.
That's where I met Forrest and Nina Woods. So it was a remarkable thing to meet Ray Scott before there actually was a BASS. And my dad spent $10 for a membership. And I think maybe, I won over $1 million in bass fishing. So I think my dad made a good investment there.
I think he did. I think he did, for to say the very least. I mean,
yeah.
57 years in this sport, if my math's right, somewhere around there, 50, whatever, what'd you say, 68?
I fished tournaments for 54 years.
54 years.
And, 2019 was the last year I fished tournaments, and I quit because they changed the rules where Chris couldn't practice with me anymore, and I just didn't feel like it'd be any fun to spend 3 days practice fishing by myself, and so I decided to quit. And fortunately, I had a good year in 2019, so it was a pretty good year to hang it up on. Really.
Go out on a high note. You know, I've told people this behind the scenes. What used to blow my mind fishing the tour with you is talking to you just about your travel schedule. And you would show up sometimes on no practice. Sometimes you would show up and get 1 day, a half a day. Sometimes you get all 3 days, but it was rare because you were jet setting around, doing appearances, going and filming. And it was just, that has always, when I realized that's how your life was, I was taken back by it, because I don't think people realize a quote dream life, how much work actually goes into it, right? Because I know you think you're living the dream, and you know you are. Your life, you're a very blessed man. It's incredible, but you put in the hours.
Well, fishing for a living is a hard way to make a living. There's no doubt about that. It's an enjoyable way, and I'm glad that we had the opportunity to do it. But when we started fishing tournaments, we were not professional fishermen. There was no such thing. There was not that terminology around. And at some point in time along the way, they started calling us professional fishermen. I don't even know when that started. But the tournaments to me were always just a lot of fun. And, you know, you've been with me at many, many tournaments and how much fun I had and what how I enjoyed the people, enjoy the competition, enjoy the fishing and everything that's involved in tournaments. But they were never really a way to make a living, you know. And, you know, that first BASS tournament that I fished in 1968 in Eufaula, Alabama, you know, I finished sixth place in that tournament, sixth place. I led the tournament the first day with over 50 pounds of bass on a 15-fish limit. I only had 11, but I had 52 pounds and something. But I ended up sixth place in that tournament. I won $325. I think the winner might have got $1,000 in that tournament. It might have been two, but I think maybe it was $1,000. And, you know, many of the classics we fished in the early days, if you didn't win, you didn't get anything. And I think the classic started out at $30,000 to win. But second place got nothing for many years. And then at some point in time, they started, you know, giving us money just for if we made the classic and even if we finished in last place. Which I don't think I ever finished last, but I finished pretty close a couple of times, I believe. but we got paid for last, you know, even just by being there. And of course, now it's $10,000 or $15,000 just to qualify for the year end.
Yeah, they just hand you a check.
Like it should be.
Yeah, and, that's right.
But we were fishing for the love of fishing and the love of tournaments and the love of each other, really. And,
yeah, the camaraderie.
Yeah, as I look back on the things that Rescott accomplished and the changes in people's lives, many of those people, great friends of mine, that their lives were totally changed because of Rescott's dream. I think that probably his biggest contribution to mankind is just the many, literally thousands of friendships that he created among people because of a little green fish and because of, you know, weighing them in a tournament. And some of the best friends I have, as a matter of fact, in the whole world are people that I would never have met had Ray Scott not been chasing a dream that he accomplished.
Unbelievable to think about. That it's just it's so crazy. And you talk about those early classics. I mean, you got to go to the hey, I'm Ray Scott, get on this airplane classics, right? You
yeah,
got to
that
do
was
that.
Wild.
Like,
what? Still did it that way.
Yeah, oh, it'd be great. But I mean, but what's the emotion
I've
like?
I've got a picture that somebody sent me a few years ago or here a while back, and I remember when it happened. But that we used to they used to give us a tackle box, and we were allowed to put 10 pounds of fishing tackle in that. And we carry more than 10 pounds of spinnerbaits now. But but anyway, they would weigh those tackle boxes and. And if they were overweight, Ray Scott would open the tackle box up on the weigh-in scales and get out the lures. And, of course, he would be looking for things like big O's and things that cost a lot of money back in those days, inexpensive compared to today's lures.
But, yeah.
And somebody at one time slipped a brick, a red brick, in my tackle box.
What?
And they put it on the scales, and everybody was gathered around, and it was like several pounds overweight. And I said, it's impossible. It's impossible. And Ray Scott opens up a drawer and started emptying that drawer out. I said, wait a minute. It's not the way that I've been. And there was somebody sent me a picture of that. And as I look back on that picture, Ricky Green was standing there and Tommy Martin and Ricky Klun and Paul Chambly and some of the real greats in bass fishing that were just having a ball laughing as Ray Scott was taking my very best lures out. And they finally opened the big drawer on the bottom and found that brick in there. But I was like, whatever brick weighs, a couple, 2 or 3 pounds overweight. Now, that's a lot of quarter-ounce jigs and spinnerbaits and half-ounce crankbaits and Zara spooks and things like that, I'm telling you.
That's amazing. I've never heard that story.
Though. It was a great prank.
Oh, I was going to say, that's a pretty solid one. That was a pretty solid group of guys pulling it on you, too.
Probably legend. Ricky Green that might have done that. You know, Ricky Green, a great tournament fisherman and a great friend. I actually spoke at his funeral and carried him to the grave. He was just very, very close.
I got to meet
him. Qualified for the first 13 Bassmaster Classics. You know, and people didn't realize Johnny Morris, the Bass Pro Shop founder, qualified for the first 5 Bassmaster Classics. That's pretty amazing when you think about that. Nobody really thinks of Johnny Morris as a tournament fisherman, but not only was he a tournament fisherman, he was a very good one at that, too.
And, you know, when you say that about Johnny, it is crazy. He's still I'll call him even a closet pro fishing fan. You know what I mean? Like, he loves it. Like, he loves
tournament fishing. He loves them to as much as he did back when he started in the early days of BASS.
Jimmy sure does. I know that you've had so many accomplishments in life and an amazing life with Chris and your kids and your grandkids and so many things, but do you ever just sit back and you look around at what, because we're talking about Ray Scott, but buddy, you have been such a pioneer in this industry and so many things and in the ways of TV but the people you're saying, Johnny Morris and Klun and you and Dance and Roland Martin, do you ever just stop? Because you go all the time, but do you ever just go, this has been pretty wild? I mean, to be just, well, to see where it's at now.
It has. And you know, we talk about it, the way that people talk about now, they call it living the dream. And yeah, it certainly is. And we got to do that. And the amazing thing about tournament fishermen now is they come out, they fish in high school, they fish in college, they come out and they aim for a tournament career, and they try to qualify to fish the tournament at the very top level, which is a very difficult thing when you think about it, because you know you got a couple of organizations out there at the top level now, and you only got 100 people or so that play in each. So to make it to the big leagues in fishing, you know, you got to be in the top couple, 200 or 300 people in the country. And so, but, you know, as you look back and you talk about fishing with people like George W. Bush and going to the White House and standing talking to President Trump about a Ranger boat. And you look at all kinds of professional athletes and actors and singers and all kinds of big celebrities that you've got to meet because of fishing and all kinds of just regular people that are just outstanding because they love to fish, that you've had an opportunity to meet and be a part of their lives, and they're a part of your lives as well. And it's pretty amazing. It really is. And it also started because of one man's dream, really. And it created dreams for literally, you know, basically to begin with, maybe a few hundred people, but literally tens of thousands of people. How many high school fishermen do you think there are out there right now fishing high school bass tournaments on the weekend that are they dream of being Roland Martin, they dream of being Hank Parker, they dream of being Bill Dance, and on and on and on. They dream of being Ricky Klun or Kevin Van Dam. Mm-hmm. I mean, just name after name after name after name. And some of them will be. Some of them will be, and even better. And these guys are just so they're like, and I know you well, and just like you and me, we just love to go out there and catch fish.
Yes.
And when we're having fish, we're having fun. And yet, because of the way that sport has transformed from when Ray started it way back there in the 60s, these kids have the opportunity to look at that and say, man, one of these days I want to be that. I want to be them. And many of them will be.
And I think we're in such an interesting time, too, where the tournament fish, like you said, there's only a couple hundred spots at the very top of the sport for people to be able to, quote, make a living or be a, quote, professional. But what you've been able to do with television, and you were one of the pioneers, and I keep using that word, but you were in outdoor television, whether it be hunting or fishing, you were one of the first, and you've been on different networks, and you've been around the world and back filming that. But now a kid that loves to fish can not only fish tournaments, but he can do the YouTube thing. Social media has created an entire world that we never saw coming, that you can feed your family with a rod and reel without ever cashing a check in a tournament.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. And many do, and many of them are making a lot more money than the tournament guys.
Of course.
Yeah,
absolutely. So
I've got friends that are making an awful lot of money in social media, and we don't know where all that will go in the future.
Right.
But it will probably simply get better as time goes on. And it's really kind of crazy the way things happen in that business. And but yeah, social media guys, I've got a friend of mine that lives right here 5 miles away from me that it makes you know, a several hundred thousand dollar a year income, that was an Oklahoma highway patrolman, and started a little YouTube channel. And for 6 years he was simply having fun on YouTube, and then he started getting paid for it, and as time went on, now he's got 700,000 people on YouTube and another 500,000 or so on Facebook, and making as much money in a month as he made in a whole year as an Oklahoma Highway Patrolman. Plus, he doesn't have to worry about getting shot at. it's amazing, and I think that as time goes by, there'll be other opportunities and things come along, and you know, we live in a country where things like that happen. And, probably no other country in the world could somebody like me and somebody like a lot of the names that we've mentioned, somebody like you, Luke, make a living tournament fishing and the things that are involved around tournament fishing. You talked about the personal appearances. You know, at one time I was doing 130 personal appearances a year and being paid, you know, really good money for doing them, and I now I only do about 60 a year, but it's amazing what all has developed, because again, Ray Scott's dream, and Ray Scott's dream really wasn't for Jimmy Houston to do 130 appearances and make a good amount of money every day doing those. It wasn't for Johnny Morris to start a chain of fishing and hunting stores and become like what he's become. It wasn't for Bill Dan. It wasn't for any of that. It was just like he had a dream to start a tournament organization and fish tournaments and chase that little green fish and sell memberships in a magazine. But God works in a lot of mysterious ways and has done so for a lot of people. And it is something when you look back on it, and you just sort of pinch yourself and say, wow, look what happened.
It is, man. And I do the same, and I'm not, I'll never be Jimmy Houston caliber. You mentioned, you said the thousands of friendships. I think that I haven't even really this week, that hasn't hit me, but knowing guys like you who are my heroes and Rick Clunes and Larry Nixon's and Tommy Martin's who I grew up watching and having the opportunity that I've had in this life, in this fishing industry, man, it is for me every single day. It's a pinch myself moment. And buddy, I can't thank you enough for coming on here and sharing with us. And it's an honor, buddy.
Well, I appreciate it, Luke. I appreciate it a whole lot. Appreciate you. And I appreciate what fishing means to this country. And we got to realize that probably this could not have happened in Canada or Mexico or Turkey or Russia or anywhere else in the world other than the United States of America.
Right.
And we're really blessed to have been born here and lived here all of our life. And it's changing and it's drastic, but as long as God keeps blessing America, it's going to continue on as a great, great place to live.
Amen, buddy. Well, I can't thank you enough, man. And I've got to make the pilgrimage to the ranch one of these days. I've talked about it for years. We got to go film a YouTube.
It's always good.
I know. Got to film a YouTube.
And even better than that, the catching is always good.
I need that in life. I need
fishing's
some.
It's always good about everywhere, but sometimes the catching's a little bit more difficult.
But I need more.
The catching is always good here. We make sure of that.
I need catching. That's what I need. I need catching.
That's right. We all do that. It makes the game a lot more fun.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you, Jimmy. Tell Miss Chris I said hello, and thanks for sharing your Sunday afternoon with us.
I appreciate it, Luke. Have a good one. Whack them out there and give them a kiss for me.
I will, buddy. Thank you, Jimmy.
Take care, pal. Bye.
Jimmy freaking Houston, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I got. That's all I got. That man is special. That was something. It's rare that I'm speechless, but so many things said there by a bass fishing legend on this silly, goofy show that I do here from my Low Budget Live Barn Grill. Thanks to each and every one of you for listening, for watching, for keeping up with all the craziness. And God bless Jimmy Houston. God bless Ray Scott. I'm going to take you out with some Biloxi Blues. Be sure to hug your mama. We'll see y'all next week.
I never could make it last. Spanish moss and Civil War ghosts, well, I'm gonna leave them in the past. Any direction, Lord, I'll be fine. It don't matter, east or west, north, south, wherever the wind blows. goes, I'm leaving those burdens at rest. This highway, it does not know my name, and I don't care, no, I don't care. Heading my way for another place, and I got three good tires and a spare. Just a white line gypsy getting out of Mississippi with just enough gas to get there.